Welcome to the Spike Feed, your number one podcast for Magic the Gathering tournament coverage and financial information. Today we've got another big, huge show, but there are two of us. I am Curtis. I am your resident Spike, just your average everyday tournament player. And on the line with me is Cameron, our, what would we refer to you as? Casual moving to competitive? Is that how
yeah,
we
I would say
it?
I'm trying to move up that food chain.
How's that going for you, by the way?
Okay. It's good. You know,
there is a learning curve.
There is definitely a learning curve, and I'm digging it, though. I'm digging the learning process and really picking up on some of these cards and seeing the nuances, and actually just experiencing the Magic community as well and seeing the wealth of information that's online makes me feel good.
Can be overwhelming.
It's overwhelming, but I also like the deep, dark hole. It's like you know, going into Lord of the Rings, I can just spend hours in the chat rooms reading.
And before you know it, you're reading the same.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah.
A few things here. Our other host, Big D, Dustin, he's our financial expert. He is still in Japan. Unfortunately, he is in a resort and unable to access the internet. So we feel bad for him, but not really.
Yeah.
Big guy, you're missed. Hopefully we can have you back next week. We're going to talk, more Theros spoilers. The whole set got spoiled online, so we're going to cover a few more cards, not a ton. And we're also going to spend a little bit of time with our take on the coverage and what's going on with that. So first, though, I want to cover our week. Cameron, you did play a little bit this week, but just on Magic
Online?
Yeah,
just Magic Online. Let's see, I drafted on Tuesday night, I think it was, Wednesday night, and it was all right. I started rare.
This was your first non-new player
draft,
right?
Yes, this is the first one where I actually used the tickets and went in there. And it went okay. I started rare drafting just because I wanted some of the rare cards. But those...
And you ended up in an 8-4 queue, right?
Yes, yes. And this is the other thing. We've talked a little bit about Magic Online and its kind of obtuseness with how to go about operating the system. You know, if I just had gone into a room and just kind of looked to see what the difference between an 8-4 is and a Swiss, that probably would have been helpful, and I would probably have gotten more bang for my buck. So anyway, I went an 8-4, lost the first one, and, you know, so be it. That's how I went.
Dude, as soon as you told me that via G-Chat, I think we were playtesting or something, and you were like, yeah, I was in this 8-4, and I was like, oh, no. You know, that's one of those things I felt bad not warning you about. And honestly, I know there's going to be some listeners out there who are going to say, how did he not know Swiss was Swiss pairing? And, you know, you're probably just looking for the button that says draft.
That's exactly
right?
What it was, yeah. And it's not friendly to noobs. I know that.
Yeah, right. And also... this was an M14 draft, correct?
Yes, it was. So, I mean, it was really basic. And, you know, I tried to do some sliver stuff that worked okay. And that's what it was.
Okay. Nice. Well, sorry you got eliminated in the first round. From now on, you're on Swiss queues, sir.
Always.
Until I tell you can graduate.
Thank you, yeah.
I mean, even me, like, it's very rare for me. First of all, you should never 4-3-2-2. There's many things about this online. Limited Resources, a podcast, has actually done a lot of numerical work to show why 4-3-2-2s are a bad thing to do. 8-4s are rare for me to do because I only get to draft maybe online once, if I'm lucky, twice a week, and I want to get in as many matches as I can. Mm-hmm. And yes, the player quality is better at an 8-4, but I think people overstate that difference. I think... you are going to run into Swiss players that are quite good, and you are going to run into 8-4 players that are quite bad. Or 8-4 players that are new because they accidentally
right here,
on the
this
draft
guy,
button.
Yes.
Yeah, right? So, you know, that's a stereotype, but it exists and it's out there. Speaking of slivers, I went to an F&M this week. F&M's kind of a rare thing for me to go to live. Cameron, I want to tell you a sad story.
Tell it.
Okay, so here's the overall tapestry. There's this card called Glacial Fortress. It's a blue-white dual land, and I've played it for the last 4 years. Played it in Kago, played it in Cobblade, played it in Delver, played it in blue-white-red Flash. So bottom line is I've won more matches with this card probably, partially because it's been legal for so long, right, for 4 years, which most cards are only legal for two.
So this is your Millennium Falcon is what you're saying.
Right. I have a signed playset of Glacial Fortresses, nice. And they've been with me through thick and thin. And I have M10 or M11 ones, I don't remember. But they're well-loved, we'll say that. There's no way they're leaving my collection. And I wanted to send them off in style, so I kind of arranged it to where I could go play Friday Night Magic. Played against random control decks twice, won those matches, and then I played against the Slivers deck, the Slivers Constructed deck. Unfortunately for them, I was playing with a deck that plays Supreme Verdict, so that was kind of a buy. And then I lost the finals, the only other player that was at 9 points with me, and we couldn't split because there was another two people that had a 2-0-1 record, so they were tied, okay. Right? So we had to play it out, otherwise we would have split. I wanted to get out of there because, as you know, F&Ms can sometimes drag on.
The wee hours of the morning.
And you're anxious to get home to your family, you know, or, you know, just sit around and eat some ice cream and watch an episode of New Girl with my wife. You know, that's just how it goes. And so I finish this match. I lose in the finals. And I tell the guy, because I see that the first place player is doing this, he's like, hey, can I come back tomorrow and get my prizes? And I say, you know what? I'd like to do that too. Mm-hmm. Right? I just want to head out. I'll come back tomorrow. It's going to be like $15 or $10 or whatever it was. Not a big deal. I'll just swing in because I want to buy some cards anyway. So he says, sure, I'll leave a note. My wife's working. This is the store owner, and this is a newer shop in my area. Show up the next day, and I say, hey, my name's Curtis. Did he leave a note for you? Because I have some store credit that I banked last night. And she said, no, he didn't leave a note. I'll call him. I said, oh, okay, no big deal. And I'm thumbing through. And she goes, okay, hangs up the phone, looks at me and says, oh, you don't get any prizes because you got fourth.
What?
And I was like, okay, so I was just like, okay, I'm just going to leave because I need to look at the match results. And did you know, like, for Live Magic, there's a Planeswalker points thing that stores your match wins and losses?
Yes, yeah.
So I checked it, and one of my results got altered.
Whoa.
So my first match, and keep in mind, I saw the tournament reporter throughout this tournament, right? This is why the guy and I at the end were talking about splitting, because we were the only two players with 9 points. And, I looked at it that Saturday evening, and lo and behold, my first match got changed to a tie.
Oh, dude.
So, which it wasn't earlier in the tournament. And I don't know if the store owner did it. The store owner is letting players go behind the counter and look at the computer. So I'm kind of in this awkward situation where, who cares about the sum of money? Like, who really cares? I'm not really concerned about the actual prize money. I'm more concerned that this thing kind of happened.
Yeah.
So this is an ethical dilemma, Cameron. Do I report this to the tournament organizing structure? Do I say something to the owner? I mean, I'm never going back.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
well, I mean,
that's a done deal.
You know, to have this behind the counter policy with customers seems really sketchballs to begin with. And I don't know. I mean, have other people run into this issue before? Have you talked to other players with this shop? Or
you know what? It's such a new shop. I don't know very many of the players there very well. I'm mildly acquainted with one of the guy I lost to in the finals. He's a really good player. His name's Jason. But almost everybody else, I'm not even on a first name basis with them. It just happened to be a new shop. It's one of these that it's a comic shop and an action figure shop that has jumped into Magic because Magic is so much more profitable. As you know, action figures and comics haven't done nearly as well in the past six years compared to Magic, which is growing at an alarming rate. My understanding is Warhammer is doing very well at the store level too, but I'm not a Warhammer player. Regardless of all that, what do you think I should do? What would be the ethical thing to do here?
I don't know. Because I'm like the introvert who's really quiet, I would probably just walk away and forget about it. Maybe go back in a few months and see if, same situation may come about. I don't know. That really stinks, man. I don't know how to solve your quandary on that.
And I know there's going to be listeners out there that are going to say, they're saying right now, this wouldn't have happened if you didn't leave and you could have verified your results. And I totally get that. And I, again, it's not about the prize money for me. It's really more about the fact that and again, Friday Night Magic record, I don't really care, but the fact that this just occurred really strange.
Yeah, yeah, that seems way too casual and just kind of like slimy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And again, I'm worried that it was a player more so than the store owner, because I don't think the store owner would be incentivized to have this kind of thing happen. So, yeah, I mean, what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to just write an email to him and just say, hey, look, this happened. What's really interesting is my first round opponent was, I mean, I'd say he was 11 or 12, mm-hmm. right? A kid that's very new, seems like a great kid. But, I mean, it was his, you know, starter deck kind of thing.
Yeah.
Probably an 80 card, 70 card deck, and that's what I got listed as the draw.
Yeah,
you know,
okay,
it's very awkward.
Yeah, you know, you bring a good point. I mean, just email the guy, just say, you know, I'm not in it for the prize earnings or anything like that. I just want to bring this to your attention. See what happens. That's probably best. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of those things. I have a normal store that I go to. Shout out to Action Sports, North Kansas City. That I love. And the store owner has been an awesome guy to me, and it's just a little bit further of a drive, and my schedule worked out so I could try this new place, and I got burned. You know, it's one of those things where you find the shop that you like, you should stick with it, and support the stores that are good to you, you know? Anyway, did you have anything else to share with your week, Cameron? You know, I know you watched some stuff, but we're going to talk about that later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Did you play anything else?
We played a little bit on, Wednesday night or something, and you kind of helped me build my first red-green aggro deck. And, so that's kind of brewing right now. And I'm looking forward to kind of tweaking that in the weeks to come.
Okay, let's just make things right and talk about spoilers and the big elephant in the room, the spoiler that we haven't been talking about. I don't know how we just kind of dodged the Red God.
Yeah.
But we've never talked about him on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And I knew you would want to. I was worried that I was playing to my stereotype and not wanting to talk
such
about
a red
cards,
hater,
even good
dude.
Ones. You know, so we just I don't know how. I just missed it. So do you want to go ahead and read that card for us, Cameron? We can talk about it a little bit.
Okay, so we got Pufuros, I think. God of the Forge. He costs 3 and 1 red. He's indestructible, a legendary enchantment god creature. As long as your devotion to red is less than 5, Pufuros isn't a creature. We've heard this a lot of times. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Pufuros deals 2 damage to each opponent. And then you can also pay 2 and 1 red. Creatures you control get +1/+0 until the end of turn. And he's also a 6/5 creature when he becomes that through the devotion. So, can I say I want this card? I want it really badly.
You and everybody else, man. Look at the price on that bad boy.
Yeah, I mean, it's there. So, I really want to give Young Pyromancer some love. I have some sitting here, and I feel like there's something here. So, like a Molten Birth. Have a couple of those in there with the Young Pyromancer.
Man.
And, oh my gosh.
You're turning into a brewer
you? Yes, yes, yes. I'm loving this card.
So, are you loving it? Because, Cameron, the way I see this card, Young Pyromancer could pair with like just a mono-red strategy, like a big red strategy, or it could be in a red-blue deck.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, red-green, I don't know. I mean, he might just fit in red-green just because he's going to be a 4-mana 6-5 that happens to ping your opponents. But if you're looking to, quote, combo with him and you want Young Pyromancer in that deck, you're probably going to want more spells than a red-green deck would provide
you.
Right? There's this really interesting tension with this card in Domri Raid, right? Because Domri Raid says, basically, pack your deck full as many creatures as you possibly can. So his +1 ability allows you to draw more cards.
Yeah.
Whereas this card also says that it wants a lot of creatures. However, Young Pyromancer, by its very nature, wants a lot of instants and sorceries, right? So it's a interesting tension, and I'm wondering if these are going to be separate decks, but I think this guy is going to fit into both.
Okay.
I think he is super strong. Like, if you just have him in red-green aggro, and you just play a guy and hit them for 2,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, please,
right?
Yes.
Like, yeah, like, and if you were playing Boros Reckoner, which is a, you know, gives you 3 red loyalty at the 3 drop, I mean, that's going to be super strong. This guy is scary. Just scary. I think he's going to stay at 30 bucks.
It's like this and Thassa are, I think, my 2 favorite god cards. They're just, I don't know, they're just so sick and awesome and Yeah, I can see the mechanics behind them.
So can I tell you, this is how big of a nerd I am. I've played with Thassa now. I've proxied up decks. And, you know, because you get so excited about the spoilers, dude. You just can't help yourself.
Like September, what is it, the 25th, 26th? When does that happen? It can't come soon enough.
Yeah, right. It's Christmas four times a year. And I went out and I bought up the proxy version of my deck. Gainsay, which is a reprint, I went out and bought the old versions of. Because I didn't have any in my collection, so I could have it, you know. And I'm pumped for this set. And Thassa is very strong. Heliod, I'm still big on. I've been playing around with him. Mm-hmm. I think he is way better than people think he is. I'm going to stand by that. And if there's a Sphinx's Revelation deck, I think he's in it. And honestly, it's been outperforming Aetherling, which has been kind of surprising in my initial test. Now, that doesn't mean that that's going to hold true forever. I'm not guaranteeing anything, but at $10, Heliod's good. I'm hoping that I can open this Purphoros, though. He is sick.
Yeah. He's pretty sweet.
Can we talk about another sick red card?
Yes, please.
I want to talk about this one because... though it's a red card, it's also kind of a control card, right? Mm-hmm. It's called Anger of the Gods. It's one red for a sorcery. Anger of the Gods deals 3 damage to each creature. If a creature dealt damage this way would die this turn, exile it instead. So typically cards like this go into ramp decks where you're like a green-red deck that's trying to just produce huge creatures. And that would be in line with that Planeswalker we read. What was that, last week?
Yes, yeah.
The green-red Planeswalker. And this Purphoros, you know, it's not a fast aggro kind of deck. But, man, this card is very strong. And I'm kind of surprised that it's pre-ordering at $4. It seems
better. Yeah, it does seem kind of low. Especially, I mean, this seems like a good card to get early on to really deal with creatures that Scavenging Ooze or Deathrite Shaman are going to be using. So you get those out very quickly, and I mean, I don't know, it just seems like that's going to help you a lot.
And they don't get a Voice Resurgence token. So, because he gets exiled, he doesn't die, and Voice Resurgence, as we said, huge player. And I got to tell you, when I was at the card shop the other day, I was this close to buying Voice Resurgence because I saw they were down to 35 a pop. Which I think they're going to be way more expensive than that. So we'll see. Okay, what's our next card we got here? Steam Augury. This is another paragraph, so I'm going to let you read it.
Okay, we got Steam Augury. Casting cost is 2 blue red. It's an instant card. Reveal the top 5 cards of your library and separate them into 2 piles. An opponent chooses one of those piles. Put that pile into your hand and the other into your graveyard. So this is very similar to, I just looking at the message boards, Fact or Fiction, apparently, but the big difference is like you get to choose what piles your cards go into, which to me seems like a huge advantage over Fact or Fiction.
So here's, and I think you've never played with Fact or Fiction.
I've never.
Because here's what happens. The opponent separates them out into piles. Then you choose the pile. Okay? This, you're separating out the piles, and then the opponent chooses.
So it's reverse.
So it's weaker than Fact or Fiction, actually. It's also, you know, a red mana, right? So you have to be playing a blue-red deck versus just a blue deck, or a blue-axe deck, I should say. So this card is really interesting. Stereotypically, if your opponent's making the choice that's bad for you, but it also kind of, at an FNM level, you give your opponent a lot of room to make stupid mistakes. Mm-hmm. And I love cards like that. I just, dude, I love it whenever my opponent makes a mistake too much. I will say that, you know, you're a big young pyromancer guy. This seems like it would go in that kind of deck.
It could fit pretty well, yeah.
Right? Because you're just looking to go off and generate card advantage. And it's instant, so you would do it at their instep, which would be pretty saucy.
Nice.
I mean, you know, you can put the deck together. You have this, you have Purphoros, you have Young Pyromancer.
It's all coming together.
You're making guys. I don't know.
Like
if,
it.
I, I don't know if it's Molten Birth, you know, capable, but, you know, hey, I would be a happy man if I lived in a world where Molten Birth was a playable card. Mm. Okay, Whip of Erebos is our next card here. And this card, of all the cards at my shop, the shop I was at on Friday, the one that will remain nameless, this was the card that most players were excited about. Now, there are a lot of Johnnies there. There are a lot of EDH players. But here it is. It's 2BB for a legendary enchantment artifact. Creatures you control have lifelink. Mm. 2BB and tap. Return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. It gains haste. Exile it at the beginning of the next instep. If it would leave the battlefield, exile it instead of putting it anywhere else. Activate this ability only anytime you can cast a sorcery. So, that's a mouthful. What do you think of this card, Cameron?
Yeah. Well, one question I've always had, artifacts, this seems kind of interesting that it has a color associated to it. I haven't run into that very often. So that seems kind of interesting. And I mean, that's just sick when you have your entire board of creatures with the lifelink. That's, I don't know, that feels kind of good in some ways. But the return the target creature card. Yeah.
Yeah, here's the thing. I think people want this kind of effect to be better than it is. Hmm. Right? So the idea is that you mill yourself, you put a bunch of your cards in the graveyard, you have a huge fatty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you use this whip. And there are other shenanigans that you might be able to use to try and make it to where the creature stays in. Like cards like Aetherling, supposedly the ruling is going to work out to where if you blink your Aetherling, meaning it comes into play and comes out of play, that this effect would not stick and it would just stay in play after you do this. The problem with this kind of deck historically is it's just a really slow, you know, burn to get to this point. And against an aggro deck, like the kind of deck you're going to be playing, you're already dead.
Yeah.
By the time you have this 4-mana whip out and you're doing this activated ability, they don't care. And then on the flip side of that coin, if you're playing against a control deck and they counterspell your reanimation spell or your whip, you're dead.
Yeah.
Right? So reanimation decks have to have a lot of things happen for them to be good. So I'm not very big on this card. I'm going to get rid of it as soon as I get it. Last one, and I saved this one for you, Cameron, because I knew you would like
it. It's another one of those cards that I just want to have right now in my hands. It's Fleecemance Lion. It's a green and a white creature cat, and he's a 3/3. And pay 3, green, white. Monstrosity, 1. If this creature isn't monstrous, put a +1/+1 counter on it, and it becomes monstrous. As long as Fleecemane Lion is monstrous, it has hexproof and indestructible. Sick, right? I don't know. I like it a lot.
It's a good card. It's not as good as Voice of Resurgence, which I think is what's kind of hurting it. Dustin hates this card. Hates it.
What was his reasoning?
I think he thinks that it's just not good enough for the 2-spot in the green-white deck, which obviously you're going to have 4 Voice of Resurgence, however many other 2-drops you need, because Scavenging Ooze is out there, right? So it's probably a card without a home. However, you're right. It is a very good card. And it's one of these cards that has, you know, that unique ability that's early game and a late game ability, which is kind of uncommon at the 2-spot, right?
Yeah.
And Scavenging Ooze and Voice of Resurgence have both of those things as well.
I just really like that. I mean, if you get this thing onto the battlefield, the person's going to have to start messing with this, which means you might be able to get some other creatures in on the battlefield because they're going to have to deal with this before he becomes monstrous, right?
Yeah, and if he's, you know, it makes the green-white deck even better against other aggro decks.
Mm.
You know, against a control deck.
Sure.
Like, okay. Sure. Yeah, I think it says that he's indestructible and blah, blah, blah. But this is like turn 7 that this is all occurring. You know, it's going to take a while to get to that point. And maybe as a control player, that's going to be a huge problem. But it doesn't say trample. So if I have an Aetherling or whatever online at that point, I'm just going to block and blink my Aethering, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So it's not really a concern. But if I'm another aggro deck and it's a late game card, It's really good. I just don't know if it's as good as scavenging is.
No, no, you're right. I think what really it comes down to is I'm just going to have to start hosting my own tournament where it's only aggro decks and no controls. It'd be great.
That's most FNMs, by the way. Most people really don't like playing control. Speaking of, and you know, I'm just going to add this to the chat. My card of the set, Garen, it's just so beautiful.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Dissolve. I saw this card and immediately, Walking on Sunshine, started playing in the back of my head. It just has those three initial words at the beginning. Mm. Counter target spell. I'm already in.
That scry ability, right? Too. And then
Yeah. So exactly what I'm looking for. And it is, when I've been testing with it, it's been fantastic. I've been really happy with it.
And the art is pretty awesome on that, too. I mean, just as a side note, I guess. But yeah, overall, that's a sweet card, especially for a...
Wizards, if you're... For a counterspell? Yeah. Don't be a hater. Wizards, if you're out there listening, please, pretty please, with sugar on top, give me an FNM version of this with the old blue frame. Please.
Okay.
I don't know what it's going to take, but that would make me... I'll never ask for anything again. You can keep making Magic Online terrible. I wouldn't care. All right, let's hop out of this and let's come back and talk Deck of the Week. All right, and welcome back. It's time to talk Deck of the Week. You know, Cameron, I'm all about you today. I'm all about giving you your wheelhouse.
Why is that? Is it just because I'm the only one here?
Right. I'm aiming to please.
Yeah.
My knowledge, I'm the only, you know, control player that's ever been on this podcast, for the record.
Yeah, that's true, I think, yeah.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
I have to go back all the way to a month, but yeah, I think so.
Yeah, right. And this is the Naya aggro deck that won the Star City games by Rudy Brixa, I believe is how you pronounce it. And this is the kind of aggro deck I actually really like to play. It's more mid-rangey. It's not about the first three turns as much. And there's a lot of long game in it, especially with the four Thundermaw Hellkites. So, dude, talk to me about your impressions of this deck. I know you were really high on the green-red aggro Burning Earth deck.
Yeah. You know, this feels good. I could, like, just like a warm blanket in the wintertime. I think I could just wrap myself up in this. The Scavenging Oozes, the Boros Reckoner, I mean, all around, it just seems to speak to me. And you're right, it's kind of a slower speed, which seems to help a little bit.
Okay, so the question is, you know, in a vacuum, I have the, like, we're getting ready to play it in FNM, and I have the full green-red aggro deck for you, and I have the full Naya deck. Which, by the way, green-red aggro took second place in this tournament. Okay. So those would both be legitimate choices. Which one would you take? Which one would you be more comfortable with?
More comfortable, definitely, with that green-red aggro. It's just a little bit more straightforward for me. And I think it would just... I would be able to play it better and more strategically and more discerning than this one, where there's a little bit more going on with this, which I like. But if I'm really seriously playing the tournament... I need something that I'm just a tad bit more comfortable with.
Yeah, and there is a little bit more play to this. However, the thing that I hate about playing about this kind of deck, like, it's really fun in a casual sense for me. Like, if you were to come over and we were to play those decks against one another, that would be a blast. The thing that I hate is the mirror with this kind of deck. I think I said this last week, but you never feel like you're making the right decisions, I guess. Maybe that's just my problem. But I always feel like it comes down to who draws what when. Now, obviously, there's some skill tree type things that happen. But a lot of times, whenever they go Hellrider, you're just like, well, okay. You know, and there's something about me having a deck where I can point to a decision I made and say, that was wrong, and I should have done XYZ instead. It makes me feel better than when I feel like I'm just playing off the top of my deck. That being said, this deck is sick. It looks like a lot of fun. Okay, so a few other things. Yeah, we were going to talk about finance, but we're going to skip that because A, we're running long. B, okay, let's just talk. Let's give the setup. So we wanted to talk a little bit about coverage. Okay, Now, I watch coverage almost every weekend. Full disclosure, I have been a showrunner for Star City Games before, meaning I'm the one that kind of gets the host their deck list and coffee. I've done that once before for a couple days. But that being said, I went to school for broadcasting, now I work in education, but I've had a little bit of a background. Cameron, you've had a much stronger working history, and you work in television now, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm a producer for a public television station.
Right. So, we have a background in this kind of thing. It's not just we're just spouting off from the hip. I want to make sure we understand that. And I directed you to, once you started, you know, coming back to Magic and playing at like a competitive level, I asked you to start watching the coverage on Twitch, and you've watched Grand Prix coverage and Star City Games coverage, which is both kind of streaming coverage, not professionally shot. I think we can agree on that. But much more of a sit and get stream kind of thing. So let's get your impressions. You watched a little bit of the Star City Games Open today. You've watched some of the Grand Prix in the past. Let's go over it. What do you think is the problem? Do you think there's a problem? Easy softball question.
Yeah, we'll start this off with, I think there is a problem. And it just comes down to boiling down what makes good television. I feel like if you don't have a background in, let's say, some off-the-wall sport in Australia or, you know, something like rugby, I don't really have an understanding of, like, the meta game of rugby, but I understand the basic constructs of that it's a game. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Magic. I actually understand a little bit more deeply about Magic. But watching these coverage events, man, it's how do I put it without being just too condescending? It's just so...
To you, it's not good television.
It's not good television. Like, I don't understand what's going on the screen when I'm watching it. And that comes down to, like, just I can't see what the cards say, so I don't know what effect is taking place at a certain time on the battlefield. I don't know what the hosts just never really are that clear in telling me exactly what I need to know, the way that a football game or a League of Legends competition on Twitch TV or anything like that explains to me as a viewer what I need to know. I mean, I just feel like if you're just a casual viewer of this, good luck. You're not going to understand anything of what's going on. I mean, there was like some significant moves and significant plays being had. And the announcers were just completely oblivious to it as much as I was, just because I don't think they were totally understanding of like what makes good television, what makes good announcing as far as explaining it.
Right. And I should say here's a few things. So again, to give more context, you have definitely been a behind the scenes guy. You're not talent, right? You are.
No. I am not. I direct, I
produce.
Yeah. Right. And I produce, do all of the stuff that's behind the scenes.
Right. And you are the guy that's responsible for our audio quality here, right? Like this is the thing that you do.
Sure.
I should say, if you're listening to our site, or like our podcast from our site directly, where we're uncompressed. So here's the thing I'll point out, where I did a lot of play-by-play and sports coverage at the collegiate level, and I worked on the Jumbotron and these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, there is a perception in the Magic community that the quantity of content is more valuable than the quality of the content. And what this leads to is these streams that are outrageously long, sometimes 10, 12 hours. And that's incredibly hard on the announcers who, by and large, are very untrained. But there's not enough magic going on, a magic stream, right?
Yeah.
And it is completely, I would kill for them to do this. Go through your recordings, record a bunch of matches on Saturday, and then at the end of Saturday or the beginning of Sunday, produce for me 3 hours and pack in as much magic into that 3 hours as you possibly can. Throw it on the stream and let me watch matches of Magic the Gathering. The stuff where it's the announcers on camera is 9 times out of 10 murder. It is no professional television station would ever dream of airing anything like that. And that goes for the Pro Tour coverage as well. One of the big problems is they're just not recording B-roll matches and placing it in between. And it used to be on Star City, they would just full on go. Now when they go to break, they show you a pre-recorded match, which is a huge step up. But the other problem is the roles of the announcers aren't clearly defined. When you announce a sporting event, let's just take football, for example. One guy is play-by-play. One guy is color. One guy gives you every single thing that happens, and the other guy, when something isn't happening, gives you an analysis. And those roles are very clearly defined, as you would be in a band or a singing group or whatever. This guy is the bass. This guy is the baritone. Whatever. You are not mm-hmm. allowed to deviate. But on a Magic stream, hey, we're all just freestyling. Who knows what we're talking about, right? And it's that level of stuff really drives me nuts. Because it hurts the game. It hurts you as a guy that's coming into the game. And I say, watch this really great match. And you don't know what the cards do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, what should happen is, like, these guys should just be recording it as though it were a radio program. Just talk about everything that's actually happening on screen. I don't even want to see a visual yet. Go back and listen to that. And if you don't understand what's going on during that match, then you haven't done your job. You need to go back, re-record the actual content that's happening, and then give me the, like you said, the color narration that's also happening, the analysis and whatnot, and back and forth. And that makes for good radio, and which in turn will create good television when you just have like just one screen up of the battlefield, you know?
There's a bunch of other little things. Like, for example, everyone is sitting down on camera all the time. The Pro Tour has gotten to the point where people are standing, but they clearly haven't been trained on, or they're too nervous to handle it correctly. I mean, all these things that you and I were trained are super huge no-nos, particularly saying, I don't know, or I'm not sure as an announcer is one of the worst things you can do. It's one of the biggest party fouls. 'Cause if you don't know, why are you talking? Right.
Yeah. I got so frustrated with watching these because I see so much potential, and they're like what makes good television of, like, you know, there's situations of people or characters that are making interesting decisions, and which in turn creates a good story. There are those happening during those Magic competitions, and it happens during sporting events all the time, of just like a football game. You're seeing like these interesting situations that create good stories, and it's happening on these Magic games, but like I can't tell what's actually happening on screen. I can't tell what's happening through the audio channel or anything like that. I got so frustrated. I had to go to Magic Online. I just joined a random match and started watching that tournament, and was just watching that right-hand side of the screen. It was giving me the explanation of what every single card was doing in context to what's happening on the battlefield, and it just made for a really enjoyable watch and as a consumer of this content.
Yeah, and let me rebut some of the arguments that would be out there. First of all, people saying, well, you know, Magic players who know what's going on don't want to hear that basic analysis. Not true. And in sports, that's exactly what happens. I know every single thing that's happening in a baseball game. It's never a mystery to me. And the announcing, like when it's good, still matters and still relevant. Secondly, you know, I think a lot of the people at Star City would say one of the big problems that they battle is they have to travel from city to city, from location to location, and there are a lot of problems built into that. And again, I think you could work around that by not giving me a 12, 10-hour stream that's not digestible. And I'm sorry, I mean, I know this is not what people want to hear. I would love it if it wasn't live and you just produced something that was a condensed 3-hour thing that I could watch over the course of a week. As a working professional, it would make a lot more sense to me. And just cleaning up the announcing, you know, and these guys, these poor guys, even if they are good, by the end of the time, they're just exhausted.
Oh, they're drained, man. Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't ask somebody to perform an informational speech for 12 hours straight, right? It's not Congress. We're not filibustering here, you know? Like, come on now.
So I don't want to be like too down and out on this. I mean, there's so much potential there, and it could be as fun to watch as like a Dota or League of Legends tournament or StarCraft or any of those. It could be just as good. It just needs some thought put into it, I guess, from like some producers, and that'd just be awesome.
I'd be excited to watch that. They know how to get a hold of you. You're not going anywhere.
Here's my number. You just at Cameron McCoy. please.
Right. Like, I don't know. There is a level of production at every level. Like, the Pro Tour production levels are fine, but it could still be better. And, you know, again, I'm saying this out of frustration as somebody who watches it all the time. And I was so frustrated. A guy wrote an article on, man, I'm totally spacing on his name, but I know I shared the article with you. Criticizing the coverage of the Pro Tour and the Star City game. And the blowback was so intense from people who work coverage that it was like you can't be questioned. You know, and I should say this. Magic coverage has improved a ton over the last 2 years, and it's gotten a lot better. But if you are in any kind of broadcasting and you think you can improve, you don't belong. It can be better.
Always, 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 always. It's always a work in progress.
Right. And Cameron, you fire people for being content, right? You're just that big of a shark.
Yeah.
At your
exactly.
job.
Exactly. I mean, we look at our footage all the time, go back, reanalyze it. This worked, this didn't, you know, this created a good, interesting piece of television. I just don't think they're going back to do that. It's just 12 hours of coverage.
Yeah. And by the way, it's a nightmare to go back and watch stuff because I'm the kind of guy that, you know, there's no baseball game on tonight. I'll throw on, you know, Finkel versus Kibler. And, you know, just to go back, like YouTube ends up being the best place to find it, you know, just kind of sad.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go ahead and kind of take a break from this. We've been running really long. We want to just have you become a spike. We're going to ask you about a card, and then we'll cut out for the week, okay? Cool. Our final segment is always us molding Cameron, sculpting him into a tournament-level player where we give him an old card, an old format card, a card that sees a lot of play, and ask him to evaluate it for us. Sometimes the cards are very simple and straightforward. Sometimes they are not. Today's card is a little card called Ad Nauseam. Cameron, go ahead and read Ad Nauseam for us.
We've got Ad Nauseam. It costs 3 black, black. It's an instant. Reveal the top card of your library and put that card into your hand. You lose life equal to its converted mana cost. You may repeat this process any number of times. So infinite draws, right? That's really what it comes down to. You can have low casting cost cards. You can get like really serious card advantage because of that. And this is where I know there's going to be some cards out there, and I didn't want to go and cheat and try to see what cards this might pair up with, but there has to be a card where I can pretty much mill everything in my deck and somehow win the game.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's there. And then I remember from a few years ago playing with a Platinum Angel, which I know as long as I have it, I can't. How does that work? I can't lose a game and my opponent can't win the game. Is that that right?
Right.
So right. I feel like there's something there as well where I could pair this off with this and somehow win the game with Ad Nauseam.
So Platinum Angel, the problem with that is in Constructed Magic, if you go, okay, I'm going to go to negative 40, because in Magic you can go to negative numbers if there's a card that allows you to do so. Platinum Angel would be one of those cards, and then they Doomblade your Platinum Angel, then insta-dead.
Yeah.
Insta-dead. Okay. But there are cards like that. However, Ad Nauseam usually doesn't pair with those kinds of cards. It just usually draws you enough cards, and like you said, you pair it in a deck with a lot of low casting cost cards. It goes into Storm decks, where you draw a ton of cards, cast them all, and then cast a card with Storm. The effect gets copied, you know, 10 times. And they're dead. Now, yeah. I will tell you, you can kill yourself with Ad Nauseam. It's happened many times. I've done it to myself many times. You can get unlucky and you're at 5 and there's one other 5 casting cost card in your deck and boom, you're dead.
Yeah.
Right? But it is a card that leads to more drama than just about any card in Magic. And that's what I love about it.
It does seem polarizing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very in flavor with black, right? Like you're hurting yourself to gain an advantage that would inevitably win you the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think you'll probably never play with this card, knowing you. Should we say risk averse? Is that fair?
Yeah. You should see my stock portfolio. Totally flat, right? Yeah.
It's all Johnson & Johnson. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Just toilet paper companies. That's all you have in your portfolio. I love it. Anyway, so let's close down the show for this week. Cameron, you can be found on Twitter where?
Cameron_McCoy.
I can be found at Curtis Now. And we are on manaechoes.org. They post generally very quickly for us, and they've been great to us. We're also on mtgcast.com, but most notably, we are on spikefeed.com. And you can find us there next week. Later, guys.